Thanks for joining us today, listeners. We want to let you know that we're putting a trigger warning on this episode because we're going to get into some heavy topics, some that may be upsetting for you. Check out our show notes. We'll give you a little bit more information about what you can expect. Thank you so much for being here. Hello and welcome to a very special episode of Bitches on Comics. Woo, 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 woo. Today, we're taking a sidestep to the left of comics and entering the wonderful world of vampires and vampire television. You know, we like it. We like to come back to it. And I'm really pumped that today we have a very special guest here with us. You know her voice from the Good, the Bad, the Basic podcast, the lovely Alex Malcolm. Hi, Alex.
Hey, it's nice to be with y'all.
Yes, again. Welcome back. It's been a minute.
It has. You know, we're just out here in the world.
Scripting and things. Doing drafts and crying and getting back up the next day.
Yeah, lots of crying, lots of crying. Ugh. I don't know that I've ever cried so much in my life. But if I have to cry, I'm glad it's over. You know, my work and the stories in my head, and you know, not a man. Like, gross.
Perfect delivery as always. So, listeners, you know Alex's voice, but you may not know Alex is a screenwriter. And so Alex is working on a ton of cool shit. And since we're friends, I get to read it. Ha ha ha. So I'm just saying, look forward to the day that you see Alex Malcolm's name on your TV screen, because those shows are going to be fucking lit. We just talked for like half an hour or more about one script, and it was just so fun. Oh, I can't wait. It's coming. Let's all manifest for Alex. It's the next step is coming. We're manifesting. It'll be here before the episode comes out. I believe.
I believe. Same. I love it. All the good wishes and thoughts.
Yes. Well, okay. And so Alex and I are buds. I was like, hey, we should talk about something for the podcast in 2023. Alex was like, sure. Because I'm annoying. I was like, let's do the Teen Wolf movie. And Alex was like, sure. And then it came out and she was like, no. And I think that was a fair response. I'm going to say I think it was a fair response. So then I was like, okay, well, what do you want to talk about? And you have been trying to get me to watch this TV show for a very long time. Well, you know, as long as it's been out. And I finally came around, Interview with a Vampire, which is so exciting.
And listen, I get your trepidation because it's like, Anne Rice is so great. But then like, she also kind of sucked. Like, so it's
exactly.
Hard.
Well, and you know, you're really the person, I can't remember what we were talking about, but you really brought to my attention the way that, oh my God, I think it was like Vampire Diaries or like fucking, what's the one that's like the old people, the originals?
And oh no, it is Vampire Diaries as well.
Okay.
Funny enough, because I think I know what you're going to say. It's about like how it's all like this kind of old South romanticization. Yeah, it is Vampire Diaries. So like I had actually never seen Gone with the Wind, which like if you're from Atlanta, you know that that's kind of like sacrilege because it was like shot here. But I had never seen Gone with the Wind ever. And I've sort of been lately really trying to expand my classical film knowledge. So I've been watching a lot of classic films, watching a lot of films, famous films. So I watched Gone with the Wind. And after I watched Gone with the Wind is when I truly put together that like Julie Plec really did attempt to make Gone with the Wind, but like the TV show.
I remember when you said that, I was like, I had never considered that, but you are so right.
Yeah, like it really comes together. It really comes together when you watch Gone with the Wind and then you rewatch the first season. You're like, oh no, she really just was like, what if it was like Gone with the Wind and it was like Savannah and like Rhett, and then but then there was like a touch of Buffy, but like it wouldn't that be incredible? It's like, no, bitch. Like, what are you talking about?
It's actually a mess.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
A real mess. Yeah, no, you made me think about that sort of treating the South as setting instead of a real lived in place and using the antebellum South as aesthetic, but then not engaging with any of the reality of what it what the South is. And so I know that was part of what I was like, I don't know, you know, Anne Rice, we've talked, she can nail it and she can really miss it. And, you know, I think that's what I found so powerful about Interview with the Vampire, the TV show, that's what we're talking about now, not the movie, is that it didn't just say, okay, let's set this in NOLA and have a good time, which is definitely a vibe of the show. And I really enjoy it. But it's like, let's deal with what it really meant to be alive at this time as a Black person, as a Creole person, and as a newly formed vampire. And I think that it is one of the most incredible slow burns in that, like, you, I don't know, I was thinking about this with my partner today. We were talking about, like, okay, the first 3-episode arc, the 4th episode, and then the last 3-episode arc. And it's like such a different show, but at the same time, everything that's there was there the whole time. And so I think that that's what's, I just really enjoyed it. So when you were like, hey, you got to watch this, I always watch what Alex tells me to. Why wouldn't I? Alex is a brilliant mind in TV and film. And so, you know what? When I get an assignment, I do it. I might do it late. I might turn it in late, but I will do it. And I was, I don't know, Alex. I mean, what's your, some of your initial responses when you watched the pilot? What did you think?
Oh, I, first of all, I was just so excited because it was so good. I felt like I hadn't, like, I feel like everything right now is just not that great. Like, or I'm watching a lot of things that I'm very unmoved by. Not that, okay, let me take that back. Not that things that are coming out are not good. I just, I'm not personally moved by them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was moved by this. I just, it was so beautiful. The set design was so gorgeous. The production design was so gorgeous.
Ugh.
So, it's really well so shot. Gorgeous. And then, like you said, it really has this command and I think strong ideation about how to engage with the series. So like the original, so full disclosure, I have not read the books, but I know enough.
I haven't either.
About the books. I know enough.
And I haven't seen the movie since I was like way too young to see the movie. You know what I mean? Like, so I came to this fresh, which I actually wanted to do because you loved it so much. So we'll keep it fresh.
Okay. Well, I know, I haven't read the books, but I know enough about the books to know that in the books, Louis is a plantation owner,
mm-hmm.
or like he's a former plantation owner. He's a plantation owner who's like, then, you know, the Civil War happens and then he's no longer a plantation owner. Mm-hmm. But like that characterization of like using slave owners, plantation owners, like coding them as a sort of like old world nobility is something that can be found across vampire literature,
mm-hmm.
Which is weird. Like that's a very weird thing weird. That like people keep, that like it is this thing. And that's why I'm like, Anne Rice, great, but also like not great. Like
exactly.
Cause she is like, she was kind of the one who like started all this shit. And she, and like every single white girl was like, yes, it is super romantic.
Mm-hmm.
This Confederate soldier.
Mm-hmm. True Blood.
True Blood.
Vampire Diaries.
Vampire Diaries.
Originals.
Twilight. It is super romantic, this slave owner. Like, it's weird.
Right.
Like, what are you bitches doing? It's weird.
Exactly. It's like, what is...
like, why can't you romanticize the dude that works in the mines? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't you mm-hmm. romanticize? Well, I guess all the lung stuff is like not sexy, but I don't know. I think there's something like kind of hot about mining.
Yeah. I mean, it feels very yonic, you know?
Like, yeah.
I get it.
I don't know.
Well, you know, I wonder, I wanted to ask you about this. So I'm so glad you brought this up. You know, I've thought about this a lot too, because it always feels so stark. It feels so like fucking weird and gross. And like, why are we trying to revamp the image of these fucking shit stains? And, you know, I obviously white supremacy, but I also, part of me was wondering, you know, is it part of the problem of trying to create a really old character, which is like, you have to deal with a history maybe as white people you don't think about. And so they sort of gloss over it. I don't know. What do you think is going on there?
Like, people just really think rich people are really great. And like, I just don't think rich people are really great. Like maybe that's the thing. I guess that's the thing. Like in America, we don't have like princes and kings and like
right.
quote unquote nobility. And so I feel like, right, because that is princes, nobility, dukes, earls, those are the things that Bridgerton dreams are made of, right?
And yes, yes.
Which is also really problematic, but we won't get into. But like, also has a lot of problems. We'll do that in a
different episode.
Yeah, another episode. But like, I guess the South and a group of people owning and exhibiting immeasurable exponential violence on another group of people is the closest that we've kind of gotten to a monarchy in this country.
And you know what's fucked is it's like they almost get it. It's like, yes, the monarchy is incredibly violent. It is a bad thing. And so, yes, these are incredibly violent, bad people. We're not supposed to be like, yay, kings. We're not supposed to be like, yay, people who enslave other people. That's like the complete wrong way to read the allegory that they're trying to make.
Right. And like, listen, like, and like, also, this is an American thing. I also think, funny enough, like, in my sort of traverse now of traversing of classical film and like really watching a bunch of these movies, like Anne Rice, Julie Plec, what's her face that wrote Twilight?
Stephanie Myers, maybe?
Yes.
Wow, I'm shocked I pulled that one out. I almost said Sookie Stackhouse because my brain was going like True Blood, which is also a character and not an author.
Charlene Harris as well.
Charlene Harris.
All these women are women who would have been like, of an age where like they also sort of like were really absorbing classical film. And like when you look at a lot of classic film, I was kind of like in like going through it and stuff, because I, like I said, I'm just expanding my knowledge and really watching these movies and kind of investigating the past and the studio systems and the stars and their pictures and how pictures are made.
You love history.
I do love history, very much so. Sort of looking like watching a lot of these movies, there is like a old classic Hollywood, I would say like subgenre of like movies about the South, specifically mm-hmm. movies about slavery, like, or like period films about, yes, the antebellum South. And like, when you watch them, they are these like really like, hey, that was amazing. Like, that's what all the movies are basically about. Like when you yeah. watch like Gone with the Wind, when you watch like Jezebel starring Betty Davis, it's like the movie is like, yeah, she's just this girl who owns a bunch of slaves, but the movie is like, hey, wasn't this great? Like, wasn't this just a great time? Wasn't this just so fun? So like, I am gonna be like, you bitches are smarter than this, grow the fuck up. But also mm-hmm. I can sort of understand why they think that this is romantic. But then the fact that you think it's romantic and you never think to investigate that further, or like why you're making these romanticizations, I think is a consequence of just being, you know, part of the privileged class, I suppose.
Absolutely. I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. That's why, you know, I was like, I know why it's white supremacy, but also like, what are the specifics of it, right? Like, I think that was, I don't know, I just felt what you were sharing fascinating.
Yeah.
To think about. And I think that's why Interview with a Vampire, we're both segueing together. I love it. That's why it stands out in the canon, right?
It does stand out in the canon. It's a show that's like, so like you said, yeah. And so like I just said, in the book, Louis is a plantation owner. In the show on AMC, by the way, AMC or AMC Plus, I don't know, whatever your thing is out there in podcast land. Louis is no longer a plantation owner. He is a business owner. They've updated it. They've taken it from the 1800s to the early 1920s. Mm-hmm. And he is a business owner in Storyville, New Orleans. And he is a Louisiana Creole. And like, he's a Louisiana Creole Black man. Mm-hmm. And then the show really does contend with that. Like, that part of it is they use it. Like, you know what I mean? They don't shy away from it.
Which so often when people are and I don't love this term, but when they're casting people differently than in the original source material, let's say,
yeah.
There's so often an inability to then grapple with how that would change the story. There's such an, I saw someone talking about this we know when you wrote someone as a white girl and you cast a Black girl to play her. Was that you tweeting? Was I reading your tweets? Am I quoting your tweets back to you?
Maybe.
I might be, which is a little embarrassing, but I was like, that is exactly real, right? Like when you just sort of go, oh, well, a Black person can play this. Of course, Black actors can do many things. Of course, they can play some version of this character. But you can actually grapple with what it means at a much deeper level. And I was shocked that Interview with a Vampire did that. And to the degree it did.
It same. And but you know what? I remember when it was announced, I knew it was going to be good because I I had read an interview with the creator on AV Club, and he was just already just so smart about it. Like, I mean, he was answering questions and he was like, well, he had like a cerebral, it seems like, understanding of the history and like just how it was going to work. Mm. And I mean, down to sort of really being honest about like the queerness of the narrative, right? Mm-hmm. Which the original movie is not.
Right.
The movie is like, oh, they're just bro pals.
Real close bros.
Real close.
I remember I watched an interview with Jacob Anderson, who plays Louis Dupont de Lac, the main character, and Sam Reed, who plays Lestat de Lioncourt. I'm so bad at French. But Lestat is not great. But anyways, Sam Reed and Jacob Anderson, in their interview, people were like, why'd you make him so gay? Sam Reed is like, that's the book. Like, it is gay. Like, what do you want me to say to you? And I was like, that's actually pretty, like, a really funny response, especially because he's so French and he has this accent when he's saying it. It's like really, really cute. He's like, he has a lot of disdain, I feel like, for the question, which I respect.
Right. Which he's actually not French. He's actually doing really incredible accent work.
What?
Yeah.
What is he in real life?
He's British.
Oh, that must be the accent that I heard it in. My brain was like, British, French, what's the difference?
So like, that's another part. These performances.
That's incredible, actually.
Yeah, the performances that Jacob Anderson and Sam Reed are turning in are phenomenal.
I mean, world-class performances. I mean,
incredible performances. To the point where like, I kind of don't ever. Actors are very wonderful, beautiful people, but sometimes they're just like, not that smart. And... so when there's ever like interviews about like, so I very rarely, read actor profiles unless like I'm very interested in their work, like, or they're just truly turning in performances that I'm like, oh my God, what? Like, and yeah, Sam Reed is turning in this, oh my God, what performance?
It's so nuanced. To give us a Lestat that is this smoldering monster under this veneer of like, oh, you're going to let him talk to you like that because the color of your skin? You know, like just this, the master manipulator, you know? Like just every little piece carefully placed until he gets bested by Claudia.
Listen, an abusive boyfriend if we have ever seen one, honey. Like,
I mean, right?
An abusive boyfriend. I'm just like, oh my God. Listen. Okay, so let's talk about it. Oh my gosh.
Let's do it. Let's go.
Let's do it. And okay, and so this is another thing that I really love about the show, because there is something to me that's like upsetting in our current moment where like a relationship will truly be like abusive and ugly and toxic and sad. And like the show will just present it, but it will not comment on it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you bitches, not too much on you girls, but you bitches will be like, this is love. And I'm like, are you ho serious? Like, absolutely not.
You're like, is that love? Or is he collapsed his world so greatly that all he has is Lestat? Because that.
Listen, okay.
That's bad.
Like, okay, that's bad.
If you're seeing your relationship reflected in this, that's a red flag.
That is a red flag. And so y'all will be like, that's incredible. But I love the show through, oh my God, the journalist. What's his name?
Daniel Malloy.
Yes. So I love that like Daniel Malloy is like, he is Daniel Malloy a character, but he's also very much acting as like the audience show, but also the show surrogate. Who, when Lestat, when Louis is recounting these stories, I love how the writers have positioned Daniel, because Daniel's like calling, he's like, no, bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And I love,
he's like,
and
that's fucked. That's yeah, fucked.
Yeah,
that's fucked.
He's like, that's fucked. He's like, that's crazy.
So you're like, he's like, oh, fledgling, do you mean slave? And you're like, whoa, that's ballsy to ask a vampire who could rip your throat out. But then you see Louise's response and you're like, shit.
Right. And I do think, and I really love the Daniel Malloy character. I love how he functions in the narrative so much, because I really do. I think it's just, first of all, it's fun. It's so fun
to have someone so contentious in the face. Like, I was, my wife was like, I felt like the journalist was like too in his face. And I was like, no, that's a man who's dying, who's been a journalist for so long. He does not have any fucks left to give. And he's someone who's like, what, I'm supposed to be impressed by like a deathless vampire? No, I'm going to poke all the holes in your story. And I was like, that's what makes it work, honestly. So I agree with you. I think it's integral to the show.
It's so integral. And it's funny that you said that, because I think it works. It's interesting because it works on so many layers. And on one layer, it's working as like a character. Daniel, the character, is working because it's you can kind of take it as like this comment, even on like the lack of spine in modern journalism, because like as an interviewer, as a journalist, like your job is to sort of be antagonistic to the narrative, right?
Yes,
you are like a cross-examiner poking holes in the story and like to get to the truth of the heart of what it is.
Like, you can't just accept what someone tells you, right?
Yeah,
because people lie, and people lie to themselves.
Exactly. And like that is, and I've talked about this with friends who are journalists, who are like, it's like nobody asks the right questions anymore. Like, people are asking bullshit questions because they don't want to offend or are happy to go with a narrative that your interviewee is establishing. But that's not your job, like, as a journalist. That is not your job as an interviewer. Your job is to get to the truth, to, like, question, to, like, in real time, pick apart a story to like, so you can then.
Yeah, you got
to
spot the holes.
Then
you build a real narrative versus like just telling someone what someone said.
Gotcha. Right? Mm-hmm. There is something that you can construct that is real, or as real as we can with, you know, everybody. We all have our biases and thoughts and perspectives.
Right.
So the Daniel Malloy character can also, like, in one layer, can be looked at as a comment on modern journalism of like, the writer's going to be like, no, this is actually what you're supposed to be doing. And so that's one. And then two, Daniel also functions as this really incredible, he's functioning as the audience surrogate, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's two. And then three, he's also functioning like as the show's moral voice to also like pinpoint like where the show is not just doing something that I think a lot of people do now, which is upsetting to me, where it's like they present something, but because they have nothing to say about it or they have no comment on it, it's not necessarily striking a blow against like perverse systems, but actually just perpetuating
exactly
a violent, and I don't want to say problematic again, but problematic narrative and ideation of relationships, of race,
absolutely,
of gender.
Of like beautiful gay men, right? Like of like, this is, oh, you know, I think I'm, tell me where I get off, but I think I'm like following what you're saying, because I felt this instinct. I always watch things with like three selves. I feel like you're that way too. Like my writer self, my like critical analyst self, and then like my viewer self. And let me just tell you, that viewer is a dumb bitch. Like that viewer fucking loves. Oh, God.
At least for me,
she's an asshole.
Smart.
No, they're not. No, mine's not smart either. No. Mine's like, oh, they're going to fuck. I love it. You know what I mean? Just a fucking heathen. And I was like drawn in and I was like, oh, my God. Vampires are the only way gay people could be together in the 20s. This is so beautiful. And then, you know, Daniel would jump in and be like, and I'd be like, you're right, Daniel. Thank you. Thank you. I needed that. I was on the Lestat train, right? Like I was
right,
getting
wrapped in.
Like when Louis's dancing with him and he's like, and I fell. I was like, me too. I'm falling in love with this dance.
It's like, we're all in love. It's like, me too, bitch. You're not special. Like,
exactly. Which I think is brilliant because it makes us empathize with the survivor, right? With Louis, because we're like, yeah, I can see how I get pulled into this. But then, like you're saying, Daniel's constantly there to push against that and say, like, that doesn't feel real. That doesn't feel like the full story.
You were in an abusive partnership.
Yes. And like that becomes so clear in the back half of the season, right? Like it's very clear. It's very stark. But it was there the whole time.
So yeah. So that's the show. Like it's really great. So yeah. So the front half of the series is like, Louis and Lestat meet, and, you know, Lestat is chaotic. Chaotic.
And hot. Like, I'm not attracted to him, yes, but he is crazy fucking hot. Crazy like, there's hot. One point where he steps out of that car he bought for Louis, and he's like, I got you a card. It's like, yeah, you also almost murdered him.
That's what I'm saying. Don't. Claudia, my sister. My
Claudia's
sister,
like,
Claudia,
fuck
really.
This, fuck you, scratches it.
Scratches it.
I'm Claudia's the greatest, maybe one of the greatest characters ever created. Like, I'm obsessed with her. She's so cool.
Yeah, and she's so, you know, honestly, I was like, you know, honestly, so everything's happening with Louis and Lestat, right? And they're mm-hmm. together, and it's a mess.
And they're both so fucking beautiful, and they're both so hot, and they're both so, like, and then they have that wild eye color that happens when you become a vampire.
Yes. And then so Louis missing basically his family, because now he's been cut off from his entire family. Because mm-hmm. naturally, they're like, this is weird that you're not aging.
You haven't aged. That feels devilish.
Which is devilish. And it's I will say, I really love the characterization of Louis and, like, how tragic that is, because it's like his family is such a huge part of his life, and it's established that you know he's closeted, right? And mm-hmm. so
they're mad at him at first for shacking up with a white guy, and then they're mad at him for being violent, and then they're mad at him for not aging, and they're like, I think it's one of those times where when you layer the metaphor with real queerness, and it's so much richer for the fact that you have both.
Yeah, it like, right, because then there's so much happening. Like, I was even gonna say, like, so Louis is in the beginning when we meet him, like, Louis is closeted, and so, like, he is, like, you know, very carefully having to express that side of himself. Mm-hmm. So I think, like, all people who are kind of not necessarily queer, but, like, you know, different weirdos, not that queer people are weird, I'm not saying that's right. Okay.
But I, like, don't know. I think we all know.
but because he cannot express his queerness in a way that is wholly safe, and he has to be extremely careful, he very much uses the love. He finds other sources of intimacy and love, right? Like, mm-hmm. he is deeply, like, invested in caring for his little brother who is sick, right? Mm-hmm. He very much loves his big sister. He very much is into, like, his mom. Like, he's very much into his best friend at the brothel. Mm-hmm. And these are, like, the forms of, right? Like, he loves his brother, right? Mm-hmm. He's devastated when his brother commits suicide. And his family is such a big part of his life and how he is living it. And it's not perfect, obviously, but it is like comfortable enough for the time period. So when he gets with Lestat and Lestat turns him, it's like we really feel, and then, like, you know, like it's his mom, like it's the mom first, you know, yeah, like you said, first they're like, they're so not about this white man, whoever this white man is.
Yeah, like, they're like, that guy is weird. And they're right. He is weird.
He is weird. Like, they're not wrong to feel that way. And, like, Lestat is not, he's not every white partner, but he is a lot of white partners that mm-hmm. I've seen. Like, in that, like, he's kind of dismissive of Louis' family. Like, it's like, have some fucking respect for people. Not even respect, but, like, because, like, like you said, it's really rich. It's really layered, because it's like they're not really about the queer thing, but they're also really not.
And that's but that's also the subterfuge Lestat uses to isolate Louis, which is an incredibly important aspect of how abusers work their evil.
Right. It's like the family's not super on board with this queer thing, but they're really just like, but they're really not on board with this white man thing.
Exactly.
And Louis does not really give them a reason to be. Lestat doesn't give them a reason to be, because he is equally contemptive of them for the black thing. Like, as much
as... Well, and he would say it's all humans, but you're fucking right. It is different with black people.
There is, like, a racial, like, undertone of it that's happening when they all meet him at the family dinner. And it's all very super tense. And he's, like, weird. And he's, like, really shitty about
And doesn't he try to use mind control on the mom or something? Mom,
which is weird. He's
and
really,
then Louis's like, knock it off.
Knock it off. He's really shitty about Louis's brother who's sick, mm-hmm. which is lame because it's like, you know he's sick. Like, you know he's sick. Like, stop this. And
well, and then there's that question that hangs in the air. Did Lestat kill?
Did Lestat kill him?
Mm-hmm. Did he kill Paul? And it, Louis asks about right, but even the answer doesn't feel like
it's like,
enough,
yeah,
right?
You don't You're know. Like, you can't
I don't
really
know.
Know.
I don't know.
And yeah. that's what's so brilliant about the show is that like it writes so beautifully in a way that leaves that question of like, we'll never really know because Lestat, baby, Lestat lies. Like, Lestat lies. You see how they rhyme? So you know. That's how you know. But there's all these things that's happening. And so then Lestat turns Louis and he's cut off from his family and he's so devastated. So you get why he rescues Claudia. He is desperate.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and he at that point, he's tried to stand up against the white oppressors who are continuing to harass him, continuing to make his business difficult, continuing to undercut the value of everything he's putting forward and calling him the F word, calling him all kinds of denigrating words for his race. And he's like, I could literally rip your throat out. Like he's simmering with rage at this point and despair and heartbreak. And he's lost everything. And he's walking down Storyville, right? And he gets to Claudia's house and he, because vampires can hear thoughts, he hears her preparing to just die.
To just
and
die.
He's like,
and he's like,
no.
No. And he rescues her and like he... And in a sense, rescues himself, right?
Because, mm-hmm. you know, he's pretty explicit about that. He's like, Claudia saved me.
And in sort of reconnecting this, and he
but
makes
then
her...
But, you know, I was just remembering this when Daniel's like, oh, you think you're the first people who had a kid to try and save a shitty marriage?
Yes, but like, and
you're
he's
like,
so
God
right.
damn it, Daniel.
He's like, and he's not wrong. He's like, he's not Claudia wrong. Is a Band-Aid baby. Like,
and you're just like, damn, calling it like you see it.
Claudia is, and that's why I'm like, the show's so great because it's like, you could get wrapped up in all this shit. And then Daniel's like, actually, it's a Band-Aid baby. Like, let's take it back
exactly.
to reality.
That was so good.
Like, Daniel's gonna, and it's not that all the other sort of things that you're feeling and we're interpreting are wrong. It's just that it is also like,
yeah,
the voice of like, reason.
Exactly. It's like all that nuance is what makes us understand Luby. Right? Like, and we want to understand him. And so that nuance, it's just all there. But at the same time, we always have Daniel bringing us back to the fold and saying, yeah, that's abuse.
Yeah, that's abuse. And then
it might feel nice, but it's abuse.
Right. And then thus Claudia is born. And let me tell you something, like Claudia is a black girl through and through because my sister Claudia said, Louis, you can do this, but I'm going to get free of this white man. Like, know that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be free. I'm going to go to freedom. Any like your black listeners will get that.
I mean, that line when she's like, we're slaves, you're a slave, I'm a slave,
and
like, I'm gonna free us,
and I'm gonna free
I
us.
Was like,
we're gonna
damn,
get
I love Claudia, man.
That's so it tracks,
it, oh, it like, totally tracks. Yeah. It tracks. Like, there was no way Louis was gonna get himself out of that, you know.
I know Louis was very much resigned to be like, I guess this is what I do now,
I'm just gonna lay
like,
sadly,
I'm gonna get free.
Eat rats. Yeah. And she's like, oh, that's real stupid.
And so another thing that the show does that is, I think, better than the film and subsequently the book is that they make the decision to age Claudia up a bit.
Mm.
I think she's like 6.
Yeah, she's really young.
She's
in the
young. I know Kirsten Dunst did that role when she was like 9.
Yeah, she was real little.
She was real little. Claudia in the show is like turned when she's like 15, I think. 15.
I think she's 14, but yeah.
14, 15-ish. And Bailey Bass, the actress, is 19.
Oh, she destroys it.
And she, oh yeah, she's so great. She kills it. Bailey Bass is 19.
Okay.
So it basically it all feels better.
It does. And it makes the questions less like, because at one point she's like, well, who's gonna fuck me? I look 14 and I'm 33. I like, who's gonna fuck me? And that
and
feels
that's
really
better
real.
Coming from like somebody like maybe
exactly.
14 on the cusp of 15.
Exactly. Than a 7
than like
yeah.
a 9-year-old.
Well, you know, I was actually thinking about you know, Let the Right One In. That's another vampire movie that has a person who was turned into a vampire very young. And it also contends with, like, who would be attracted to a child that's old, right? Like, people who should not be in relationships with people at all. People who need a lot of help and probably some discipline. And, you know, I think that I was thinking about them as companions because I was like, they both ask some really intense questions about how do you live in a permanently child's body? And then what do you get to craft of yourself from that body as a vampire? And I thought that was so fascinating in Let the Right One In, which is like, you know, this moody Swedish film. And then here it's you ask in a very different way, right? Because Claudia, yes, craves sexuality, but in a very biblical way. Also craves knowledge, right? And that those things being paired together feels very smart for the vampire narrative and smart for this young woman who is trying to create herself in a framework of abuse.
That's an incredible point, which I hadn't quite knitted together yet. And I love that you brought that up because, yeah, you're right. That's incredible.
She craves knowledge of the flesh as well as knowledge of the mind.
Yeah, knowledge of the mind. Like, that's incredible. And then also, like you said, of self, like her raison d'etre, whatever. A big part of it is trying to figure out where she comes from, like in terms of vampirically, right? Like, who else is out there? Because she's like, Lestat cannot be it.
Well, she's just like... What I love about Claudia is, like, if you give her too neat of an answer, she's like, oh, okay, so you're censoring a bunch of shit.
Yeah.
Like, if you're telling me every vampire is a monster that's out there, And even after she meets a very monstrous vampire who sexually assaults her, she still believes that it can't all be the same way. And I'm like, God damn, Claudia, you are such a cool character.
Yeah, like... My sister, like dead ass. So yeah, she has an internal hope. And then even after everything, even like you said, still holding out this hope of like, no, it can't be it. Can't be Bruce. Can't be Lestat. Has to be somebody else. You know, really thinking that she, Claudia's going to live. Claudia's going to survive. She's going to, although probably not, but like, she's gonna go out in a badass way. Although I do love that they kind of foreshadow her death in the first season. Yeah, like, okay, that's not really a spoiler. You guys, like, if you've watched the movie, you've read the book, the show very much foreshadows her death.
I mean, just even the way he talks about her foreshadows it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's too big of a gap. Like, yeah, they're not gonna straight up say it because they need some stuff for season two. But like, you know?
If you've read a book, if you've watched a movie, if you did not sleep through all of English class, you will know what has happened.
Hello there, listeners. Did you know that we work on so many projects? Like so many. We work on so many projects. And did you know we have bonus content behind all of those projects? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. And if you didn't, you didn't know then that you can have access to all of those bonus projects by joining us at patreon.com/queerspec. Join us for as little as $2 a month to get full access to all 126, at the time of recording this promo, back episodes and more to come. You can join us at patreon.com/queerspec. The vampire, like, you've probably already gotten some spoilers. I think we've kept it lightish, but go watch it and then come back and finish the episode because, you know, right here I want to talk about the ending a little bit. And I do think that's spoilery because you might have seen 6 of the episodes, but not the 7th. So go watch it and come back.
Yes. So let's talk about Rashid. Let's get into
fucking
it.
Fucking Rashid. Okay.
That's what I was going to say earlier, like, really quick. We're going to come back to Rashid, but like, Rashid remembers a point I was going to say. Because you know how we were like, oh, the romanticization in the South. Because I think people feel like the Industrial Revolution was like not necessarily like hot. But I would also push back on that. Because if you have seen The Life and Times of David Copperfield, starring Dev Patel, there is like a section where he too is in it's the Industrial Revolution. He's working in a factory and baby, okay? Like, it is not... anything to sneeze at. Like, he's looking good. I'm just saying, it's giving feel like it's giving a lot. It's very sad. So the girls are not trying hard enough. That's all I'm saying. Their imaginations are not working.
You don't have to romanticize, you know, people who murdered and raped other people. You can choose other people who are also cool. Well, not also, but actually cool.
You're not working hard enough. That's all I'm saying. And go watch The Life and Times of David Copperfield. It's a very good movie. That's it. Next.
I love it. So Rashid is this sort of background character for much of the series who seems to be like an acolyte of Louis. He's like, he's my God. But then, you know, I love Daniel's relationship to him. Daniel is like, there's something off with this Rashid character. Don't know what it is, but I'm going to figure it out. And I'm going to figure it out in the most annoying way. So just like constantly challenging Rashid or like pushing on Louis in front of Rashid.
Rashid be minding his business.
Rashid's like, I was literally praying. Why are you yelling at me?
Why are you here? Like, granted, Rashid is like, I mean, I guess in like Daniel's defense, not really, but like kind of. Like, Rashid does interject. Like, he is giving,
yes,
like,
there's something off, right?
There's something
off. He's
like,
you are not an acolyte. Like, I'm watching the way that you interact with this person. You're always around. But that moment when Daniel's like, fuck it, in the last episode of the end of it, he's like, fuck it, I'm going to push hard. I'm going to be like, you can't fucking tell me that you really thought Lestat was dead. You're not a fucking idiot. You know what you were doing. You were keeping him alive. That's why Claudia's mad at you. And then Armand is just mad behind him. Yeah, she's mad as fuck and fairer. But then in the background, Rashid is just like floating into the air. And then, oh my God, it's so cute. And Louis takes his hand and he's like,
I'd like
to introduce you to the vampire Armand. The love of my life. And I'm like, oh my God. Like, God. That's what I needed. Like, I knew Armand was a character. I remembered him from the movie. I was like, I couldn't place Rashid. I was like, I kind of feel like I know who that character is, but I was also enjoying sort of like falling into a new version of the story. And I was, God, I mean, episodes 5, 6, and 7 are just full of intimate partner violence. Some that is very
so much
explicit and bloody and terrible. Some that is implied. Some psychological terror. It is just tough stuff. And so I was like, this show is so beautiful. I think this story is so important. We do not talk about intimate partner violence enough. We certainly don't talk about it enough within the queer communities that I know. We do not talk about it enough between couples that don't share the same racial background. We just don't talk about it in these nuanced situations. The image of intimate partner violence is the battered white woman wife. You know, that exists still. I'm not here to hate.
No, yeah.
But it's a much more nuanced image. The people who are survivors of violence are men, are queer people, are Black people, and the list goes on. Disabled people are horribly abused in either intimate partner or caregiver situations. Like, it's just a much richer image. And I think I was so heartbroken by it, right? Like, of course I was heartbroken and so moved by the truth of it, the way that it unfolds. I was closeted in my first relationship, which was a very abusive relationship. And because I was closeted, in part because I lived in a place where being queer was a very dangerous thing, I was in a situation where I was isolated, where I couldn't tell people about what was happening in my life because I was afraid of homophobia. But that actually enabled my abuser to abuse me. And I never in my life expected them to confront a very similar situation in a completely different context, of course. Neither of us are vampires, at least not literally. She was an energy vampire, but that's a whole different thing.
But the fact that could really, I mean, I think that's kind of what's incredible about the show. Mm-hmm. Is that like it's speaking to something, as you just discussed, really fucking real. Like, yeah. And I remember that's why I also really loved it, because I remember thinking like, you know, intimate partner violence is a cross-cultural, cross-gender thing, because we live in the world and people suck. People sucking is a cross-cultural thing.
Yes.
And so it's like when you are, and I do think stories help us to understand ourselves. So if you, like, there can be something really fortifying and like helpful to see yourself truly reflected in a situation and then somebody be like, this is fucked up. Like,
exactly.
Free yourself. And I just remember thinking like, that's going to do so much to like help start conversations of like, okay, so like, what does intimate partner violence look like when it is queer? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, what does it mm-hmm. really look like? And like, mm-hmm. you obviously nobody's saying, you know, stage a huge Mardi Gras party and kill your lover. But like,
but if you gotta, but then if okay. you gotta,
this is also how you can get some fucking help.
Louis is like, murdered. I murdered him. And Daniel's like, fuck you. That wasn't murder. That was an act of mercy.
Yeah, he's like, you did that. God. You did that. Classic battered wife shit. Like,
oh, yeah.
And that's why Claudia was mad, because Claudia was really about that action and you were not.
She was ready.
But like, you did that classic battered person shit. And, and that is real. Like, and so I think what we're talking about is like, we're getting to, I guess, my essentially what I love about shows or and like what I look for in a show of any kind, really, not just like vampire stories, but like any narrative, is like that there is like a deep emotional truth to what is happening in the narrative. Something that is speaking intellectually, but speaking very much emotionally. Right. Mm-hmm. And then coming across being truthful. And I think the series did that. Like, and I just don't think a lot of series right now do that for me.
I'm a little softer on TV and film. I'm soft on all stories. I just like stories. So yeah. I'm like, I definitely don't have my eye attuned the same way you do. And I always appreciate that about you. But I felt like even without having felt sort of that dissatisfaction with a lot of stuff coming out now, I did feel like this is just a cut above. Like it is, it manages to do soapy in a way that is heartfelt. And that's actually hard. It is hard to do heartfelt, soapy stories.
And
I was so impressed with that. Oh, and I remember now what I wanted to say about Rashid / Armand is getting through those last three episodes was hard. We watched them all in one night. We were like, we just need to do it. My wife was weeping. I was a little bit more analytically minded because I was preparing to chat today. But emotional, very emotional, very moved. But then when Armand takes his hand and you know that Louis makes it, like, I'm very emotional talking about it. But it's that kind of that symbol of hope that you need to be like, okay, I can watch another season. I can watch Lestat come back. I can do this because he got to Rashid. He got to Armand. He got to a place where he is loved. He's in a relationship with someone else who understands at least some of his reality, definitely better than a fucking white guy does. He is with someone who loves him desperately, like doesn't want him to even give the interview because he's afraid it'll expose him to vampires who will want to kill him. But he loves him, so he's like, it's your life. I very moved. I was very moved by the ending.
Very moved. And like, and it left us in a really great place because even, you know, I think it's one of the ending beats is earlier in the narrative, we see that like Daniel and Louis have tried to do this before. Mm-hmm. Like this is something that they've done before. And this is, they're actually re-meeting each other later on in life.
Right. They met in the 90s. They show us that like grungy gay bar in San Francisco.
It's like, I think it's
the
like
vibe 70s. Is so cute. Is it 70s? Okay.
I think it's the 70s. But like they, the show kind of hints that like they've tried this before and it didn't work out because Daniel was an addict, very much using. And so couldn't really keep it together in the way that he needed to do the interview properly. And there's like a small scene. It's a very short scene. It's short beat of them all meeting in this 70s context. And it's a teaser, you know, to give us something for season two. But what I love about it is that it's definitely giving I sucked a dick once just to see what it was like.
I felt the same way. He was like, doesn't he say he's like, I mean, if something happens, I'm up for it. I feel like that's something that Daniel says at one point.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, you know, you just kind of do things, life.
That's exactly what it's like.
You just kind of do things.
What are you going to do? Life.
Life. And so I love that and I'm interested in it for it. And it's already been renewed for season two. And I'm so excited and love the show. And, you know, it's so good. It's so good. It's sad that I don't think it really quite got the push from AMC that it needed in a lot of ways. But it's very much all in the social sphere. I think it word of mouth really got it going.
Oh, yeah.
Hopefully there'll be like a bigger push.
I was surprised at like the like folks who are like maybe less online than us. I was talking to some friends this weekend and I was like, oh, have you all seen the new Interview with the Vampire? I'm like finishing it right now. And they were like, no.
I know.
You mean the one from like Brad Pitt? I was like, no.
No, there's a brand new one.
You're going to. And I was like, it's actually gay. And everyone was like, what? I was like, you have to see it. They're like, well, where is it? I was like, AMC. They're like, oh, that's why I haven't. I'm like, fair enough. But at the same time.
I know, but at the same time.
Get your little add-on to like one of your services, watch it, and then cancel.
And then cancel. And listen, like, I get it because like you have to be a nerd and like I'm a nerd. I love AMC. I know that they consistently do good work.
They actually do. They actually do some really incredible shit.
This is the company that brought us, you know, Breaking Bad and Mad Men respectively. So like they don't, it's not like it's gonna be bad. You could always
well,
even
they
if
know
you
how
hate
to
it,
make mega hits too, you know, because Walking Dead, like
yeah, and then Walking Dead. They also brought us Walking Dead. So, you know, I don't think you can sneeze.
Well, and it sounds like too AMC's got sort of this multi like property deal with Anne Rice to adapt what she calls the Immortal Universe, which is Interview with the Vampire is part of that, then Mayfair Witches, which I didn't know if you've watched any of that.
I did.
It's definitely missing like the whole thing that makes Interview with the Vampire so good, which is like
everything. I don't know. Like I wasn't about it.
I thought it was fine. Like, I was like, I like witches, you know?
But I like
I was
witches
like,
too.
No one's gay.
Know.
No one's like dealing with the fact that like their boyfriend's a piece of shit. I'm like, yeah, you know, this isn't gripping. I would say Interview the Vampire gripped me. And Mayfair Witches, I was like,
The problem with
I want to hear what you say. I really do. I've been thinking about it since we decided to do this.
The problem with Mayfair Witches, I think, is a problem with a lot of. Where Mayfair Witches fails and where Interview with the Vampire succeeds is like Interview with the Vampire has found like right that angle, that queer racial black right angle to filter it through to talk about real things.
It has something to say.
It has something to say. Whereas like Mayfair Witches doesn't have anything to say.
Mayfair Witches feels like a little bit of like a soapier version of what's that fucking show you and I both like? There's like two seasons of Witches. They're all sisters.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that show.
Witches of East End.
Ah, that's it. That's it.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It's like it wants to be serious. That's why like it doesn't work. That's why Mayfair Witches doesn't work because it's like unless you have something, because it wants to be grounded, right?
No, you're nailing it. You're absolutely nailing it. I was like, that's it. It doesn't have anything it's saying through like, the witch metaphor.
But it wants to be grounded. But in order to be grounded, you have to say something. Like, you have to have something to say.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, she lives in a boat. And I'm like, that isn't like, okay, so what does place mean to this show?
Yeah.
It feels very unclear. Clear. Whereas like, that's what makes Interview with the Vampire so arresting, I feel like, is every piece means everything.
Yeah, like it's thought about like the like. Whereas this Mayfair, which is like, I have some white women in a thing.
I'm a doctor. Oh no, my life is so bad being a doctor.
Like that's what I'm saying. What? It's like actually, you know what? I'm glad we're talking about this because I feel like if you're like a person who's interested in television, interested in storytelling, I do think it's actually really helpful to watch those two shows side by side to see like. What it looks like done right and what it looks like done wrong. Like, to be honest, specifically when we talk about how, like, in Interview with the Vampire, race is so integral. The race and the queerness is so integral to the Louis character. And then the show uses it. Mayfair Witches attempts to do the same thing with this light-skinned black mother of this white female character. But they don't use it. It doesn't mean anything. it's there as Wendy.
Right,
dressing.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying. And
I even forgot about her, because don't they kill her off in the first episode?
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Exactly. They do all the things that are actually bad.
You're like, don't do this. And they're like, don't do this. What if this is my blueprint?
Right. And I'm actually saying, that's why I actually do think it's super helpful to, because I think sometimes people, and when I say people, I mean white people. I think sometimes white people feel like they're listening to Black people or other people of color be like, put it like, include us in the narrative. And then they do something like Mayfair Witches. And then we're like, no, that was shit. And then they're like, well, then what the fuck do you want? It's like, no, actually. So if you are one of those white people, here it is. These are perfect examples of like what it means to use race or queerness in a really superficial way that doesn't do anything, that's actually really insulting. And it's actually, that would make me say, stick to the white waterfalls and rivers that you know. Like, don't go chasing waterfalls. Stick to the white rivers and lakes that you're used to. Like, versus somebody who can understand the fullness of being and like how to take all, and how like race and place and character and queerness, how you can use all of those things to tell an extremely dynamic, rich story, as with Interview with the Vampire. I think because they both do the same thing, it's just that one person gets it right and one person is like gets it wrong. That's to me, like, that's it. That's Mayfair Witches in Interview with the Vampire.
Yeah, no, this is actually, you hit the nail on the head, because I was trying really hard to name like what it was that was bothering me about Mayfair Witches. Like, I don't think about Mayfair Witches. You know, I haven't finished the series. I don't, exactly. I forget that it exists. And then I'm like, oh, maybe I will finish that. You know what I mean? Like, I'm like, oh, I got to watch something. But Interview with the Vampire, like, I took 3 months off, I think, between watching episode one and watching the rest of the series. And I thought about it probably every day. You know what I mean? It was just so good from like the first moment of the first episode.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's just so good. It's so richly told. It's so woven together so beautifully. And like I said, I think it really comes from a place of the show had something it wanted to say. Mm-hmm. Like, it had a clear, like, I want to talk about these issues. I want to talk about this, or like, I've read this book, I've read this IP, whatever. But I see where like all of this really important stuff is happening. And like, this is how we can make it clear.
I was just thinking, I think it's also a masterclass on how to adapt a property for the time that it's now being adapted in, right? Because the books came out in the 90s, is that right?
Yeah, that's 80s.
They're old. They've always existed when I've been a conscious human. That's how I'll put it. And so I think this is, Interview with the Vampire is such a good example of how to shift a narrative, bring it forward, do an adaptation that makes me feel something. You know, so often adaptations can end up feeling like just a rehashing, a regurgitation of the material in a different format. And it's like, this is proof positive. I think people are so nervous sometimes adapting things. They're like, we got to be true to it or the fans will be mad. And it's like, this is a great example of like, people fucking love it. So take a swing, say something like you're saying, Alex, have a stand and do it through, filter the original property through the narrative, the lens, the story, the stand you're taking.
And yeah, that'll give me something. I definitely, you know, that's definitely like my mood these days with a lot of stories, with a lot of storytelling that I think is coming out. Something that's like maybe a little off track, but in the same vein of like what we're saying about like have something to say, is that, you know, I was thinking a lot about romantic comedies and romantic dramas and how I think everybody wants to make one these days. A lot of new ones have been made and they're all sort of falling flat. They're not really hitting. And I think a big reason for that, particularly, like I said, as I went to visit classic films, I'm like watching older movies, watching older shows, is that, you know, I think a reason why the new ones are falling flat is because they want to pretend that love, that partnership happens in a vacuum, and it does not. It does not. And when I watch a lot of these classic film romantic comedies or romantic dramas, when I watch, you know, Casablanca or Adam's Rib or even Love and Basketball or Beyond the Lights, like, which, oh my God, we've got to figure out how to fix Beyond the Lights, but like, because it's so good. But Nate Parker is just like right there. when I watch them, these movies have something to say. Mm-hmm. These movies aren't like, they are, yes, the romance is like a part of it, but they are all saying something political. They are mm-hmm. all a meditation. All these films, these romantic comedies, are meditations on, you know, feminism and women, or the lives of women in like our problems, and or they are saying something specific about like, it is shitty that the way that girls are, the way that female artists are grinded through the music industry. Like, like the film has something to say about something. Mm-hmm. It is mm-hmm. saying something political. It is saying something explicit. And that, I think, is the problem. You want romance, or you want love without something. I mean, my God, without something political, without it having to say something meaningful. And that's just not how this works. Mm-hmm. That's not how any of this works. I mean, even, you know, The Way We Were, one of the most famous romantic dramas of like all time, right? I mean, the whole thing is about, he can't really love her because like, she's Jewish. Mm-hmm. That's the movie. Not the movie is like he can't really fuck with it because she's Jewish. That is the movie. Like, and that is so political, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, Interview with the Vampire, it's like, it's so political. Like, I don't know how to help you. Like,
yeah.
It's about something. The show is saying something. It is saying something. Granted, it's saying something about a lot of different things, but it is talking about how like the unequal power dynamics, right? Mm-hmm. In relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Even when it seems as if how like even in queer partnerships period, there are power dynamics. There are, and unless you are willing to confront them, baby, it can go really left, right?
Like, you're gonna have to kill someone at a Mardi Gras party.
At a Mardi Gras party.
You know, like, so better to pay attention sooner, you know.
Right. It is saying something, I think, profound about loneliness, about being isolated, about the things that can happen to you when you are isolated, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
From the connections mm-hmm. of your culture, right? When you are isolated.
Yes.
When you are cut off from your culture, when you are cut off from the people that love you.
Your but city, then how your hard family, it, your, yeah, yeah.
But then how hard it is that it can be to be in concert with them. Like, it's about, like, it is saying something. You've got to say something.
Mm, I think that's got to be it. I think, you know, if you have not watched Interview with a Vampire, I really hope this gets you motivated to watch the new, is it 2023? Did it come out all this year?
No, it's like 2022.
Okay, so 2022. Okay, I watched it all this year. Okay, 2022, Interview with the Vampire. It is just, what an amazing show. We hope you will watch it. Feel free to also watch the companion Mayfair Witches and go, I do see that something's lacking here. Hit us up on Instagram, Twitter. We're at Bitches on Comics. We want to hear from you. And we hope that you've enjoyed this special episode. Alex, if folks want to learn more about you, follow you on social media, where can they do that?
You can follow me at Lex Moves on Twitter. If you want to follow me on Instagram, it's at Lex Makes Music. That's LEXX_moves on Twitter and LEXX Makes Music. And then if you are a producer and you're trying to get in touch with me, my rep is Brian Brooks at 831 Entertainment. And you can reach out to him if you'd like to read a sample. Get me for staffing.
Get that sample. Get it. Go get it. You want it. I've read it. You want
and
it.
And all the other things that are great.
You're the best. Thank you so much for being here with us. This has been an absolute delight. I can't wait to see what you make me watch next.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to bully you into something else.
Please do. It's made for great life for me.
You're listening to Bitches on Comics, distributed by Realm, your portal to another world. Listen away. Find more shows like Bitches on Comics by following Realm on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or at realm.fm.
Thank you for listening to Bitches on Comics. We are a bi-weekly podcast where we talk to your favorite comics and pop culture creators and critics about what matters to them in comics and pop culture, as you might have guessed. You can follow us on Twitter at @bitchesoncomics and on Instagram at @bitchesoncomics. Our website is, brace yourself, bitchesoncomics.com. If you go there, you can listen to any of our episodes, and we've got other shit that we put on tabs. I don't remember what it is. I am in charge of updating the website, however, so good luck.
Thanks for the heads up. I'll go to this website now.
If you'd like to support the podcast, you can do so by rating and reviewing us on iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
You can also support the podcast by joining us on Patreon. Head to patreon.com/queerspec to learn more.
I'm Sarah Century, and you can find me at www.sarahcentury.com and Twitter and Instagram. Still Sarah Century on those.
I'm Essie Fleenor. You can learn more about me at essiefleenor.com. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at @SE_Fleenor.
I'm Monica Estrella Negra, and you can find me at www.audreysrevenge.com or on Twitter at @AudreyRevenge.
Bitches on Comics is recorded by Kate Warner, who plays in the band Church Fire. You can find them at churchfiremusic.com. Our music is recorded by Katie Taylor, who plays as Earth Control Pill. You can find her music at earthcontrolpill.bandcamp.com.
Bitches on Comics is recorded in Denver, Colorado. We want to recognize the indigenous peoples who have inhabited and do inhabit this land. The Arapaho Nation, the Ute Nation, the Cheyenne Nation, and others who have been erased from our history and collective memories through colonization.